This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to Season 3, Episode 67 of the North American Outdoors Podcast. This is Heidi Rayo, and I'm still coming to you from the great state of Wyoming. I am still hanging out with my friend, Brian DeBolt, and we are talking more hunting, fishing, camping, backcountry, mountain living up here in the great Northwest. So welcome back to the studio, Brian.
Thank you very much, Heidi.
Hope you're doing well.
Doing great.
So I want to learn from you. You obviously grew up in Wyoming and doing all things outdoors. Tell me what it's like up here when you are getting ready to go on a trip, whether it's fishing, camping, hunting, and some of the experiences that you have in the backcountry living with bears. I know last week we talked a lot about grizzly bears and some conflicts and encounters and how to stay safe. So tell me what it's like just living here and recreating out in the mountains, you know, when you have to think about, you know, encountering bears.
Yeah, it's wonderful that, you know, even where I live, I mean, and a lot of folks in Wyoming, they don't have to go very far from home to be in the woods, you know, whether it's fishing or hunting or just camping, hiking. And, you know, so it doesn't take long to get there, but it definitely takes some time to prepare. And, you know, besides the weather, which changes so frequently, you got to be prepared for everything. You definitely have to, you know, especially up here in Northwest Wyoming, you got to be prepared to, you know, deal with a potential encounter with a bear. And the most important thing to do is to think ahead of time and plan about how to prevent having an encounter with a bear. So, you know, I mean, just some of the standard kind of staple items, I guess, you have with you, first and foremost, is bear spray, whether you're just going for a hike for the afternoon or you're going to go hunting or fishing, and whether it's a day trip or you know, multiple days. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about bear spray. What are some of the requirements for bear spray? I mean, just any bear spray will do, or is there certain standards that bear spray has to meet to be effective? Tell me a little bit about bear spray.
So like with any product, you know, there's a few differences between what you buy, but for the most part, it's bear spray is pepper spray, it's oleoresin capsaicin, which is basically the pepper spray that you find in personal defense sprays, the mace. You know, it's basically the same derivative, but it's highly refined and concentrated, so it's much more powerful. It comes in a large can, and it So, yeah, if you do get bear spray, you want to be sure you're actually getting bear spray, not some personal defense spray. That personal defense spray kind of squirts out in a little stream, you know. Bear spray, again, comes in a large canister that sprays out in a large fog shotgun-type pattern. And there's a lot of brands out there. Many of them are very good. You just want to make sure that it's registered through the EPA. It's got an actual EPA registration number on it. And then know how you're going to carry it. I mean, are you going to carry it? You know, your belt is the most common. It comes up with a little holster that has a belt loop in it. And you just attach it to your waist strap. A lot of folks attach it to their backpack strap. They actually make ones that are attached to a walking stick. There's a, you know, chest holster. There's some different varieties, whatever you're comfortable with, depending on what you're doing.
And do they ever expire?
They do expire, you know, about 3 to 5 years, depending on the brand. And that should be printed right on the can. So, yeah, get yourself an EPA-registered big can and check that expiration date. And practice. It's don't practice in your house or, you know, maybe even in your backyard, because if that if you don't necessarily have to discharge the can that you buy, but at least practice taking the safety off. It's really extremely simple. If you can use a can of hairspray, I mean, you could use bear spray, literally. But practice pulling it out of the holster, disengaging that safety, so you at least know how it works. So if, like, say, heaven forbid, you're actually in an encounter, it's not your first time learning how to take that safety off. And it's extremely easy. There's videos online that you can look at. And there's a real good one with Kerry Gunther from Yellowstone National Park, a very short YouTube video showing you how to use bear spray. It's very good. You need to carry it accessible. You can't have it in your backpack or in your saddle pannier, you know, if you're horseback or something. You have to have it right there ready to deploy very quickly, because, like, say, in the rare instance that you do have an encounter with a bear, it's going to be quick.
That's a great point. And a lot of people think, you know, coming into bear country, that bears are behind every bush. You know, that's probably not reality, you know, but you do have to have it accessible. And that's such a good point that, you know, you hope you never have to have that encounter. But if you do, you're doing everything you can to be safe and to get away quickly by deploying that, you know, spray.
Right. So, you know, folks have every right to defend themselves from a bear attack or defend somebody else. You know, there's some misconceptions out there about what it takes to protect yourself, but or what circumstances of the situation may be. Ultimately, I mean, yeah, bears are potentially dangerous, and they do attack people. It's often for some sort of defensive reason. They see you as a threat, but you can do whatever it takes to protect yourself or somebody else. And bear spray is a great, just non-lethal, easy to use alternative. Let's say, for example, a firearm, and it's not bear spray versus firearms by any means. It's just that there's advantages and disadvantages to both, and whatever you're comfortable with. But for example, you know, when my children were young, even though they were extremely familiar with firearms, you know, they were hunters, still are. I wouldn't be very comfortable, you know, giving my 10, 12-year-old son a, you know, large caliber handgun or something to defend themselves or protect me if something bad happened. But they can darn sure operate a can of bear spray. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to use. So highly advantageous that way. But again, it's got to be accessible. You got to know how to use it. You got to make sure it's not expired. You know, it's a little mechanical device, and it can and will fail at times. So you got to store it properly. I've seen where folks have had it on the dashboard of their pickup, and it's literally blown a hole in the windshield and almost totaled the vehicle because of the spray that's embedded into the fabric and whatnot. Wow. So you got to store it properly. have it accessible, and it's just another tool. It's lightweight, easy to carry. You know, if you have other firearms or whatever that you choose to use, that's great. But again, it's a good, easy to use tool to defend yourself in case something does happen.
Awesome. So that's the first thing you need to have with you when you're packing your day bag or your week-long, you know, pack to head out. What are some ways that, you know, aside from the bear spray and, you know, your personal items, what are some things that, you know, living out here so remote at times, or when you go in the backcountry, what are some other safety precautions that you take, or give me a day in the life of a fishing trip with Brian, or, you know, a horseback trip, some of the adventures that you'd share with me in the past.
Yeah. So yeah, you really got to be prepared for anything. And that's the key with going out into bear country, is being prepared. Like I said, a day hike or a day fishing trip, you know, just your staples, your food and first aid kit and whatnot, and your bear spray.
Because cell service is zero up here. So
Right. So
you can't rely on that.
Yeah, there's some great technology out there, and I don't want to promote one or the other, but, you know, there's some good safety, you know, GPS, you know, texting, SOS devices and different things that are great. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's extremely important. Being with a partner or friend of some kind is good. You know, that's just kind of basic wilderness survival safety anyway, to be with a partner. If not, if you do choose to go alone, you got to let somebody know where you're going and, you know, when you're going to be back, what your plans are, that type of stuff. But if you're going to be, let's say, out for an extended period, overnight or whatever, you have to think ahead of how you're going to store your food. The most important thing, whether you're hunting, fishing, camping, whatever, in bear country, is keep a clean camp. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's that simple. You need to think about if you're going to hang your food, do you have adequate rope? You know, how are you going to toss your rope over a high limb? You know, it's got to be at least 10 feet high, 4 feet off the nearest vertical structure.
And that's so a bear cannot get to it. So versus keeping it on the ground, like some of us flatlanders, we keep our food in an ice chest and just wedged under a picnic table bench that the raccoons don't open up our ice chest. You've got a little different critters up here in the mountains. But hanging food, because a lot of people have never had to deal with that or don't know how to do that. So talk a little bit about how you hang your food, or what is bear storage like?
And that's funny you talk about a raccoon. So I often look at bears as just a big, huge, powerful raccoon. They're so smart, and they can break into anything, and they're persistent. So yeah, hanging your food is one way to properly store your food. It's not only just a good way to keep it away from the bears, that's the idea, but it satisfies a, you know, food storage requirement that's required on most public lands in Wyoming. So yeah, you hang that thing as high as you can, again, 10 feet minimum. You know, and think of a bear like the size of an average adult man. You know, if he's down on all fours, you know, some look bigger than others, but they can stand up and they don't have to jump real far really to get to 10 feet. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to be that big of a bear. So yeah, 10 feet at a minimum. And then 4 feet out from like the tree trunk, the main stem of the tree. So if a bear does climb the tree, you can't just reach over and grab it. So that's a minimum requirement for doing that. And that's not all that easy. Again, you got to make sure you got enough rope, you got enough twine or parachute cord or whatever it is. And what type of bag you're going to put it in. Are you going to hang your whole backpack or just your food?
And with that, you know, thinking a little bit deeper into what you're saying, you know, you're going to have to go that extra step. You have to know your knots. You have to know, you know, what trees, you know, are able to do. Are you going to be in an area where you can, you know, find a location to hang your food, you know, that has that height and that has that structure, but mostly to know your knots. I mean, how many people out here know how to tie a knot that can keep it secure if a, you know, how many hundreds of pound of a bear starts to tugging on the rope? Is that knot going to keep it?
That's right. So all those things, so practice, you know, just like you practice with your bear spray, you know, practice, go down to the park and try to get a rope over a tall limb or something. And, you know, I'll even duct tape a rock to the end of the rope and then you can huck it over a limb.
See, all those little secrets that you mountain men keep.
And like I say, it could be a significant amount of rope, and that's a weight issue. Mm-hmm. So if you're backpacking or you're on horses, you got to consider, you know, how much I'm packing and you know, exactly what your food consists of. You know, I mean, I like at least one night to maybe pack a steak in and cook it on the fire. But that's a lot of weight, you mm-hmm. know. And are you going to, you know, haul all that up into a, you know, into a tree? A lot of folks like to store that stuff in a stream or whatnot to keep it cool, you know, because it's, even though it's Wyoming, it gets pretty hot during the day at times. You don't want your food to spoil and whatnot. And yeah, you can't store it in a stream. You just can't.
How do you store it in a stream?
Just tie it to, you know, a piece of rope or a stick or something and keep it cool in the water, in the shade, you know, or something. But a bear will find that right away.
Right.
So not a good idea. Don't store your food or beverages in a stream. And whether you're front country or back country, just don't. You want to store your food, you know, like 100 yards away from your campsite. So if a bear does come in, he smells it, even though it's stored properly, he's going to encounter that food. You want to put it downwind from you. So a bear's going to use his nose. He's going to work upwind, find this food that he smells, and he's not going to be able to get it, and then he's going to move on. You don't want to store it upwind from your camp because the bear's going to be working, like say, upwind and encounter your camp first and start looking for food, you know, around your tent in the middle of the night. That's no fun.
Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We've had, bears in camp a lot. And luckily, we've, you know, kept things stored good. You know, we have bear-proof panniers for our horses. And I've even found we had one bear that, you know, tumbled our panniers probably 200 yards from camp. He never did get into it, but, you know, we had to lug that thing back, you know. So we started kind of tying them to trees, even though they're in a bear-proof, you know, container. And you hear them out there in the middle of the night, clang, clang, banging those. They're aluminum, but they're certified bear-proof, bear-resistant, you know, panniers.
So do you get out and try to shoo them off?
Well, you
yell
at them and whatnot, and maybe the horses will come over to see what's going on, and that usually spooks them off. But
do the horses get spooked by bears, or are they pretty?
It depends. Some sure can, you know. For the most part, horses, you know, I think they're used to seeing and smelling bears when they're in the backcountry. A new horse is a totally different ballgame.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, this is all the preparation. It's depending on what you're doing. You know, if you're taking stock, if you're taking horses back there, that's a whole nother gamut. I mean, of course, you can, you know, have more provisions because they can carry a lot more weight. More rope, bear-proof panniers, they can carry all that stuff. You can technically leave that stuff out on the ground, you know, as long as it's closed up like it's supposed to be and you don't have any trouble. But you also have horse grain, you know, mm-hmm. maybe different things you're dealing with. And you don't want your horses to get spooked. So, you got to know your stock. Are you going to mm-hmm. highline them? Are you going to picket them? Are you just going to hobble them? What's the deal? You know, how spooked are they going to be with bears? That's an issue you got to deal with. Again, if you're going to be feeding them cubes or grain at all, that stuff's got to be stored because bears eat that stuff too.
So that's got to go up too, right?
Yeah, it's got to be stored as well with all your food and all your cooking gear and everything else. So a lot of preparation ahead of time. And You know, your cooking utensils, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff stinks. And yeah, you can wash it a little bit, but it still stinks, you know, right. when you're doing that. So, you know, if you're in a front country type campground, you can store it in your vehicle at night or in, hopefully there's some bear-proof boxes mm-hmm. available, you know, that you can store that stuff in, or maybe even some poles, some food storage poles, again, to hang that stuff. And are you going to hang a whole cooler? Again, are you going to hang just your backpack? Do you have a food sack? There's those backpacking tubes mm-hmm. that are certified bear resistant. Are you going to hang that? Are you going to leave it out on the ground? I mean, what are you going to do? You just got to think about literally every day, how are you going to store your stuff? What are you going to do to keep a clean camp? And that's the most important thing, storing all your food and all your smellables, mm-hmm. we kind of call them, you know, your shampoo, your deodorant. Don't take your candy bars into your tent with you at night, you know. And
one of the things that we learned coming up here and doing our camping, water bottles. They are considered a smellable because of whatever material, the plastic they're made of. Apparently, they emit some kind of a smell that the large, you know, carnivores like. So that was something that was always on that checklist of make sure that you don't have this in your tent. And it was always, you know, the water bottles because they consider those a smellable. Yeah. That surprised us.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, it varies a little from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, mm-hmm. what they consider, you know, an item that you need to store, you know, away from bears. But it's just a good idea to keep anything and everything. You know, if you have a little can of, you know, white gas or, you know, Coleman fuel or whatever the case may be, it's definitely got an odor to it, you know, and it'll attract them. And if nothing else, it's not like they're going to get a food reward and then be, you know, a food conditioned bear and looking around camps for food. But I mean, if they bite into all your fuel cans and pop them, you're out of luck. I mean, and right. you know, you got to build a fire or something to, you know, cook with. And if there's a fire restriction, well, yeah, you're kind of out of luck. So anyway, all those things to consider. Anything that has any smell whatsoever, you want to store that away from camp, downwind, unavailable to bears, either in some sort of bear-proof container or hang it. Mm-hmm. And and that's just at camp. You know, that doesn't include hiking down the trail.
Wow. So what's it like? Okay, so you're at camp. You've got your camp as clean as you can be. Everything is safely stored and hung. And now you're going to go on a hike. You know, what are some precautions you take when you're going down the trail?
So the biggest thing, again, is use common sense and just be observant. You know, if you see a lot of bear tracks, see bear scat.
And see, that's another education before the trip. You know what bear scat looks like. Know what bear tracks look like. Know what habitat that you're entering. You know, do your research before you go to a location to see, are there mountain lions that live there? Are wolves up there? You know, what kind of wildlife is in that area so you can be better prepared? You know, are you going to be pitching your tent under the favored, you know, berry bush of a black bear or grizzly bear, you know, so you need to find out the habitat and do your research before you hit those trails.
Yeah. You know, that's so important too. I mean, folks always ask, what does bear scat look like? You know, and it, for the most part, it kind of looks like horse scat. I mm-hmm. mean, especially when they've been eating grass, it's kind of got that same consistency and shape and whatnot. But you know, bears are mammals like us, and for the most part, they have a pretty gross digestive system that, you know, they pass things without fully digesting it. And so you can look at it mm-hmm. and you can see what they've been eating. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, this kind of horse looking dark scat, and it's full of choke cherries or choke cherry pits. Well, that's what they've been eating, yeah. you know, or white bark pine, you know, or whatever, and smell it too. I know it sounds odd, but I mean, put a stick in it. You don't have to like put your face down to it or nothing and kind of smell the stick and it'll smell like what they've been eating. Mm-hmm. If it smells like a fresh mowed lawn, they're eating grass. If it smells fruity and sugary, they've been eating berries. Mm-hmm. And So you're hiking along, you see some bear tracks. Also, you know, educate yourself on how to identify, let's say, black bear versus grizzly bear tracks, because you can't tell by their scat. You can just tell what they've been eating. So you're going along, you see tracks. Oh, these are grizzly bear tracks from what I saw. And here's some scat, and it's full of berries. And you notice up ahead on the trail, boy, that looks like a, you know, a little stream comes down through there. It looks like a pretty good berry patch. You know what? Maybe you should go around. Mm-hmm. You don't make a lot of noise. You always, the most common encounter between people and bears in the backcountry like that is a surprise encounter. You just bump into a bear. They don't have really that fantastic a hearing or eyesight, really no better than a human. They got an excellent sense of smell. But if they don't, yeah, hear you or see you coming and all of a sudden there you are, you know, their first reaction is, again, that defensive reaction, and they could attack. So if you yell out, scream out, you know, people use air horns, they wear bells, carry whistles, use their voice, whatever, just alert a bear to your presence, and they'll often move off without you even knowing they were there. So that's the biggest thing is use your head, use common sense. Avoid areas where there's a lot of bear sign. And it seems so commonsensical. Well, I had a guy one time come into my office, and he says, hey, I got attacked by a bear. Really? And so he lifts up his shirt, and sure enough, well, he had a great big bite right on his side. And, oh, the story was actually pretty – yeah, it's a long story. He did everything wrong, and I only – tell this to try to educate other folks. So first of all, he started out hiking. It was springtime in Wyoming, like this time of year, you know, first part of June. And didn't tell anybody where he was going, when he planned to be back. And so ultimately when they were overdue, I mean, the search area was huge. They really had no, they couldn't locate a small area where to, you know, confine the search to. So it was him and his girlfriend, actually, and her daughter, young daughter, like about 10 years old. Well, they're hiking down the trail, and he says, you know, there were tracks and bear scat all up and down the trail, and they didn't have bear spray, you know. So you can already think of like three or four things he's done wrong.
Right.
Okay. They were underdressed. It was a beautiful, warm spring day, and they had like flip-flops and shorts and shirt on, and no other provisions to speak of. Well, sure enough, they come over this little rise on the trail, and there's the bear that probably all the sign they've been seeing. And they surprised him at close range. They weren't making any noise or anything. Well, he attacks. He charges him. Well, the little girl was in front, and then the lady and the man was in the back. So the lady grabs a hold of the daughter and just curls up and hits the ground. They just curl up into a ball. Well, the guy turns and runs.
Oh, no.
Okay, so you never run from a bear. Okay. So the bear literally just runs right by the lady and her child and takes after the guy. He tries to run around a tree. Well, the bear catches him quickly. They're so fast.
Yeah.
And so then he decides he's going to play dead. So he balls up, lays down. The bear picks him up, spits him out, and then runs off.
Oh, my gosh.
So luckily it was this, defensive, you know, encounter. It surprised at close range, and bear's reaction was to attack because they're a grizzly bear. That's what they do. So then they kind of panic. And instead of just going back the way they came and getting out of there, they try to, like, shortcut it back to wherever they were parked.
Mm-hmm.
They get lost. It snows like 2 feet that night.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're burning money and, you know, receipts out of his wallet. They were smokers, so they did have a lighter. But otherwise, they really had no provisions. So they almost died of exposure. You know, the bite that he had on his side was not life-threatening, you know, at the time and whatnot. But they did everything wrong. Everything from the get-go. Just a few simple things may have prevented that. You know, a little preparation ahead of time, a little bit of thinking, educating themselves. We're in bear country. letting folks know where they're going, maybe carrying bear spray, you know, a backpack with, you know, a coat and a candy bar in it or something. But they literally did everything wrong, and they were lucky to get out of there alive. So, yeah, preparation ahead of time, just a few simple things using common sense could avoid a potentially life-threatening situation.
That's incredible. So what about precautions like when you're fishing? What extra things, aside from everything that you talked about, you know, doing everything right, knowing your area, your habitat, your tracks, your scat, your sign. Now you're at your destination, you know, you're on some mountain stream, mountain lake, and you're fishing. What are some things, you know, aside from being completely situationally aware? I mean, I would think that my head, when I go, I know when you've taken me, you're so used to it, you don't even think about it because you're just, you know, where you are. I'm constantly swiveling, looking. There's going to be a bear. He's going to be taking my fish. I mean, what's the reality of bear coming to find fishermen in those areas?
So, yeah, that's a definite reality. The biggest thing you have to realize is, like I said, a surprise encounter is really common. And that's no different with fishermen going up and down these streams. It's relatively noisy. I mean, you're being quiet. You're just kind of going along fishing, you know, tossing your line out there and doing your thing. It's kind of a solitary, quiet deal. You could darn sure bump into a bear. And those are travel corridors for bears as well, you know. There's some cover in there, willows and trees and different things. So you got to be aware that you could darn sure bump into a bear because they don't hear you, see you, or smell you. And then, yeah, if you are lucky enough to catch some fish, you have to be careful too, you know. At least me, I mean, I clean my fish pretty quickly. You got to dispose of the entrails, you know, get them in that fast running water, wash them downstream, whatever the case may be, so they're not just laying on the shore and you don't have bears that are used to, you know, picking up a free meal right along the shoreline where people are. So you need to dispose of that, and then you're going to stink like fish. You know, it's going to be on your hands or your clothes, your pant leg, whatever. And how are you going to care for that when you get back to camp? You know, it's got to be stored with your, you know, all your other food and everything else. So, you know, another thing that you can encounter down there along the willows while you're fishing is moose. And they're just as dangerous, you know, as a grizzly bear, honestly.
They love the willows, too.
And you can use bear spray on a moose. Absolutely. You know, they got big nostrils and, you know, mucous membranes like most mammals. And so it would be effective on a moose.
Wow.
Yeah. And I would darn sure use it on one if you need to. So
they can be aggressive, too.
Yeah.
Especially with their young this time of year.
Yep. Yeah. Female moose with young at their side are very aggressive. So, and then, of course, the males during breeding season, mostly in October, can be really aggressive. So, yeah, they're another critter to consider, you know.
Yeah. About. So now hunting, and you've shared with me some of the times that you've gone on horseback days back in the mountains, you know, beyond what you've already stated, you know, what happens when you do take something, like if you do shoot an elk or a deer or something back in the deep in the backcountry, you know, how challenging is it to keep your meat in good condition, keep it safe off the ground, you know, everything you mentioned about keeping it elevated to avoid or potentially have a bear come in your camp. How much more preparation is it when you do take an animal so many days back in the backcountry?
Right. So when you're hunting, wow, that's just a whole nother huge element of avoiding a bear encounter. For one, you're in the same place at the same time with these bears doing the same thing. Basically, you're both looking for elk. I mean, they're there hunting elk, you're there hunting elk, for example, or deer, whatever the case may be. And you really have to think ahead. How am I going to take care of this? And when you're talking elk, for example, that's a big critter. And it takes a lot of work to break that thing down you know, into something that you can pack out of the backcountry, whether you're going to have horsepower or it's going to be on your back. So you get something down, and you got to realize, you know, again, bears have an amazing sense of smell. So if you've wounded something, you had to track it for a while. I mean, a bear could be tracking that elk as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they pick up on that scent so quickly. And just the smell of elk in general, they smell them, you know. They're a very musky animal. So once you get it down and you go to field dress it and you open that animal up, that's an extremely strong smell. You've basically set up, you know, 800-pound bear bait is what right. you said right there. And that's what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And they could – some bears can be extremely aggressive in their attempts to get that from you. So they look at you as another bear, and, yeah, you're the one that killed this elk, but I'm going to take it from you.
So
I'm going to eat it.
Common sense should prevail.
Yeah.
You as the hunter should back away and let the bear have – right?
That's right.
What do you do?
I mean, ultimately, it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I mean, you're going to lose the meat, yeah, for sure, which to me is the most important. But, you know, if you do happen to get a nice, you know, trophy animal, you sure want to retrieve that. You know what? They're not going to eat the horns.
Mm-hmm.
You can always go back a week later when they're done with it and retrieve your horns. So it's not worth it. Don't fight a bear for it. That's when it's extremely important to have, you know, one or more people with you.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that thing, whatever you're going to do. Again, this is all your own personal, your preparation ahead of time. Are you going to quarter it and get it packed out right away? Are you going to have the horsepower close? Are you going to debone it, pack everything out on your own? What are you going to do? Are you going to have to hang it overnight? At the very least, you want to separate that gut pile away from the carcass. So hopefully if a bear comes in, he'll keep himself occupied, get full, feeding on the gut pile. And when you come back in to retrieve your game, you know, all or most of it at least is still left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ideally, if you don't want to deal with, you know, maybe leaving something overnight, you've made the conscious decision that you're not going to hunt in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
You're only going to hunt in the morning. And if you don't get something in the morning and have time to get it out that day, you're not going to hunt in the evening. And a lot of folks have made that choice. If you have to leave it overnight, again, you got to hang what you can. Again, very high in a tree.
Now, will they hang around knowing that something is there? Like if they smell something that strong, I mean, obviously if you take down an elk, that's a lot of meat.
Yeah.
And if somebody is capable of hanging almost all of that meat, you know, overnight, and the bear smells it, I mean, are they going to just like hang in the area knowing that there's something there? They're determined to find it?
You know, and they sure will. And they will find it. Yeah, it's not if, it's, yeah, they will find it. And yeah, that food is a huge motivator. And they'll hang around trying to figure out how they're going to get it. So, you know, another thing you could do when you leave it overnight, one thing I've done is, well, you want it in an area that you can see
mm-hmm.
when you come back the next day, someplace that you can glass from a distance. I'll put a space blanket sometimes on it, and I don't know, it seems to work. You know, I've had to do that two or three times, you know, leave a whole elk, you know, on the ground for whatever reason. There's no trees around.
Yeah.
Say, well, if the bear gets it, he gets it, but put a space blanket on it, and it, I don't know, just that weird kind of freaks them out, you know, type of deal. Maybe gives you one more day to preserve your meat and get back in there. When you do come back, again, you want to make a ton of noise, let a bear know you're coming. If he's claimed it and won't let you on it, again, just it's not worth it, let it go. Just because you don't see a bear doesn't mean there's not one there.
Right.
So still be on alert. Have your bear spray. I have it out in my hand when I'm approaching a carcass like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in my hand, making a lot of noise, approaching slowly, screaming and yelling. Yeah, hopefully you got your horses with you or whatever. Other people yelling, what's going on. And then you can get busy on, yeah, how you're going to pack that thing out of there when you're sure there's not a bear there.
Same with field dressing too, right? When you're field dressing it, you're opening it up, like you said, and laying that bear bait down. I mean,
there was a fella in Montana. He was field dressing an elk up there by Sealy Lake. And from the best they can tell, that he was just bent over, you know, cleaning it out, and that bear hit him and just killed him. Wow. Right there on the spot. He was alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you're going to be field dressing something, that's great to have a person there to be a sentinel for you, be mm-hmm. a lookout, have their bear spray in their hand. We have had multiple encounters with folks actively field dressing a carcass, and that's when the bear comes in on them.
Mm.
You know, they're unaware, they're kind of tunnel vision, they're focused on field dressing the animal and processing it, and in comes a bear and decides, you know, they're going to take it. And so it's been minor to, you know, some pretty actually, you know, fatal encounters for people. That's an extremely important time to have somebody on the lookout. And that's our only job.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. They got to be vigilant to, you know, let you know if there's a bear coming.
Sure.
And everybody can then, you know, and again, have a plan in place. What are we going to do if we see a bear? You know, so-and-so's got a gun, and the other two of us, we got bear spray, and so mm-hmm. this is what's going to happen. You got to be thinking about that. It takes an extreme amount of preparation if you're actually going to be hunting in bear country.
So if somebody's never done that before, again, you don't know what you don't know. So what recommendation would you have if you have a visitor coming from another state or another country that, you know, they want to come fishing up here or hiking or camping or hunting? You know, what recommendation do you have for those people that have never done this before? You know, not obviously not to go it alone or with a buddy, because they've never experienced this before. So are there like guides or outfitters, or what are some recommendations that you can have to keep people safe?
So, yeah, the biggest thing is if you are with a guide or an outfitter, ask them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully they'll tell you you're in bear country and these are some things that we're going to be doing. But even if they don't say it, it's your job to ask, mm-hmm. too. There is a video that was just produced by the Wyoming Outfitters and Guides Association, talking all about hunting in bear country and all the kind of bear necessities that we've been talking about. Wyoming Game and Fish has a BearWise section on their website that's extremely informative about just all things bear. And just pick up the phone and call mm-hmm. local Game and Fish office and just tell them what you're doing and you're concerned about bears, and we'd be glad to talk to you and help you out with whatever questions you have. So lots of good resources out there.
Absolutely. So any stories that you have to share with fishing or hiking or hunting?
Oh, well, there's sure been a bunch of them.
Because you've also raised your boys this way too.
Yeah, you know, they've sure been on, you know, some encounters with us, with me, you know. And like I say, I think the overly dramatic, serious encounters, we've been able to squelch
mm-hmm.
because, again, we use common sense. We don't do stupid things,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's been times where, you know, the boys are like, yeah, let's go there, see those elk, and let's do this and let's do that. No, it's just that's not the smart thing to do today. And so we've avoided, you know, those type of encounters, at least recreating, mm-hmm. you know. Like I said, we hunt and fish in bear country all the time, but we just don't take unnecessary risks, you know. And so, bears in camp and bears that we've encountered out in the wild have been pretty benign encounters. You know, I've definitely had some more serious encounters, but at work, because you kind of put yourself in, we do what the general public doesn't really do. So you kind of put yourselves in situations that the normal person shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, you know, we've had great, wonderful times, for decades, you know, in thick grizzly bear country just because we use common sense.
Right. And that seems such the bottom line is as long as you know where you're going and know how to prepare yourself to avoid those situations. I mean, just like you said, you've done this for decades and you've not had anything too exciting happen, which is good. You know, yeah. You want to keep your focus on what task you did, like the camping or the hunting, you know, instead of a side trail of getting chased by a bear. So, right. Yeah, so that's awesome. So any other tips or last minute things to think about that the common person that, you know, may not consider?
So, yeah, the big thing, I guess, just, you know, what we've been talking about is, you know, seriously consider if you want to take on that task. For example, going with an outfitter, I mean, you put a lot of faith in them, whether it's just a horseback ride or a backpacking trip or an actual hunting trip. But don't put all your eggs in their basket. I mean, they're still human and they're darn sure experienced, knowledgeable, competent folks, but you're still your own individual and take your own responsibility to learn and be familiar with using bear spray, using a firearm, whatever. Yeah, you think you may need to avoid having an encounter with a bear or dealing with an encounter with a bear. That's your personal responsibility too. Mm-hmm. And don't rely on somebody else because, yeah, I mean, if it hits the fan,
they're going to take care of themselves.
You know, that too, you know. So you still got to take care of you and go home to your family. So become educated, learn, make phone calls. And again, if you're watching something or reading an article, you know, and it sounds like BS, it probably is, you know.
Right.
There's so much garbage out there, you know, about bears on both sides, you know, both extremes. So use common sense. Go directly to the source for those folks that deal with them directly. And, yeah, and you'll have a fun, wonderful time even in the midst of bear country.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for all of your insight and sharing some great tips and things that those of us that aren't normally in bear country, we may not think about. So there is no better classroom than the outdoors, roaming the woods and waters and creating memories that last a lifetime. This is Heidi Rayo with my friend Brian DeBolt, and you've heard another North American Outdoors podcast. For more information, visit NorthAmericanOutdoors.org and follow me on Instagram at North American Outdoors. Have a great day.